Seachtain, an Indo Askeilige.
Lower and Wanchirna Elner Donaldson Lish and Ifagachin Akanir Lower Jeffrey the Dinyerby.
Ni Heg Willem Policy Shachon, Ian Rodayana Univira Listad occur Leshnabaj Bogashoot.
Skilty, Fis, Turmi.
Nimajigiri in Dram Honyal Ama, Tamajigiri Munchain Honyalista.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
On this week's Big Tech Show, when you travel, how do you avoid getting completely ripped off on roaming charges outside of Europe? And what are some of the travel hacks you should know about that aren't included in the tech you buy? We give you all the tips you need to know.
On top of my list, Adrian, is my noise-cancelling headphones. When I put them on, I love that it just goes boom, and you're in this kind of sonic bubble and you can't hear the baby and you can't hear that weird frequency of the aircon on the airplane.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by trichologist Claire Fulham, chatting all things hair loss.
I remember then going, I'm losing a bit more hair. Like, I could see hair everywhere. It was all over my desk and work, everywhere. And so I went to my GP. She found five big patches on my scalp, one the size of my fist. So I was like, right, what am I going to do about this? Give me a plan. She just looked me dead in the eye and said, there's nothing you can do. I went on a list for dermatologists. She had a cancellation and she very quickly said, yes, you have alopecia areata.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
Just a heads up, today's podcast deals with adult content around stalking, which won't be suitable for our younger listeners, and it might be triggering for others. So please take care when listening.
I wanna let you know what I was going through. All the time we were apart, I thought of you.
Thanks for that. Moving on.
I miss you.
I miss you too, random stranger.
I'm not a random stranger. I'm your ex. Don't be so cruel.
The Netflix series Baby Reindeer has been a global hit since it was released last month. 22 million viewers have streamed the real-life story of Richard Gadd, who was stalked and sexually assaulted by a female customer in a pub where he'd worked. 41,000 emails, 744 tweets, and 350 hours of voicemails later, the series lays bare the helplessness and at times hopelessness of being the victim of a stalker. For Dubliner Jarlett Rice, watching the show brought back memories of his own experience.
I was scared all the time. You don't trust people, you don't trust yourself, you blame yourself.
It was an Easter Sunday morning in 2007 when Jarlett met Lena Tinash for an innocent coffee in Ranelagh here in Dublin. As a date, it was fine, but Rice just had a gut feeling that they weren't a romantic match, and he made the fatal mistake of feeling sorry for her. And what ensued was 10 years of life-threatening stalking.
She had rang O2 and got my pin from my phone and was said she was on the way to this woman's house with a hammer and she was going to crack her skull open.
Jarlett turned to the Gardaí, but it seemed like there was little they could do. And as the harassment continued to grow, not just for Jarlett, but also his family and friends, things got so bad that he had to take drastic measures.
It was causing so much pain to the people around me that I did get to the edge of sort of thinking if I wasn't here, then maybe it would all go away.
I'm Ellen Coyne, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Jarlett Rice, who tells his unbelievable story of being harassed by an extreme stalker and the toll that it took on his life. We'll also hear from Dr. Kira Staunton, who's a forensic psychologist and academic operations manager at University College Cork, who'll outline some of the red flags to watch out for if you meet someone new, and to ask what you should do if you find yourself the victim of a stalker. So, Jarlett, you have a really shocking, extraordinary story to tell us today. But before we talk about your own personal experience of stalking, I'm sure, like a lot of people, you would have watched the hit series Baby Reindeer on Netflix. I'm really interested in what watching that must have been like for someone like you with your life experience.
I wasn't prepared for it. It was extraordinary. I mean, it's a staggering piece of work, but so much of it echoed my own experience that I kind of thought that Richard Gadd had got inside my head. There was a lot of similarities. By the end of it, I was pretty broken and in tears, just brought an awful lot back. It echoed an awful lot of my experience.
And the reason that watching this show must have been so raw and probably so visceral for you is that you endured a 10-year stalking campaign. Can you take us back to the start of what became a very difficult story for you?
Yeah, it started very simply in a cafe in Ranelagh on Easter Sunday 2007. I'd gone to drop some Easter eggs off at my brother's house, walked down, got a coffee, started up a conversation with this woman in the cafe, quite friendly, bubbly character, swapped numbers and arranged to meet for a drink. Went out a couple of times, realized that she wasn't really for me, so didn't want to have a relationship. It didn't develop into a relationship. But she was adamant that there was something there and we were sort of soulmates or whatever. So there was a lot of insistence that I, you know, see her, meet up with her. I felt a little bit sorry for her. She seemed quite lost and sort of lonely. And I suppose had that kind of empathy for her. There was things like she'd never been to a gig in Ireland, so went along to a gig with her. It was a friend's wedding that she insisted she wouldn't go to unless she had someone to accompany her, so I went to a wedding with her. So in hindsight, sort of strange things that I probably gave her some kind of signal that I cared, but then I realized that she had a lot of emotional problems. She was seemed to be heavily in debt, losing her job. She would ring me at all hours of the day and night in an emotional state. I tried to get her help, tried to get her counseling, even talk to her family. But her focus mainly was on me. And that became something that developed into a more concerning issue.
Okay, so this person, Lena Tantash, you had kind of engaged in this in good faith, maybe like potentially the start of a relationship. A couple of things troubled you. And as far as you saw, that was the point at which you wanted to end it. But then, as I understand it, she moved in quite close to where you were living at the time. Is that right?
I was living over in Ballantyre and she moved into a apartment up above where I was living in Steppeside. So she would have to, in inverted commas, drive by my house to go wherever she was going, or by the shops or the shopping centre where I was. So invariably this began to happen very often, that she would suddenly just be passing by when I was leaving my house or coming home, or I'd be in the shop and she would bump into me. I just got really uncomfortable with this. I asked her to leave me alone. I felt like she was harassing me. And she was insistent that, you know, these were just coincidences. But what I realized, and a shocking discovery, was that she had rang O2 and got my PIN from my phone and was listening into my phone messages. So I was doing some work for a friend of mine. She had left a message on my phone to arrange to meet. And this woman was listening to my messages, got this person's number and rang me and said she was on the way to this woman's house with a hammer and she was going to crack her skull open.
So oh my God.
I can still remember where I was standing when I got that call and it just completely freaked me out. So I called the police. They told me that they would go and caution her. She made up some story that we had split up and she was upset and she never meant to do anything. So they sort of said to me that that was, you know, job done. But this is when things sort of escalated. So I tried to cut off contact with her. I started getting multiple phone calls, emails from the extremes that she was threatening to take her life. She had a knife. There was blood everywhere. I would get these bizarre text messages and then emails petitioning me to meet up with her, to see her, just to talk. She would drive along beside me on the road, get out of her car, screaming in my face, tell me to get into the car. She would get on the Dart when I was on the Dart, get on the Lewis, just followed me around, turned up on trains. My mum at the time was unwell in Dundalk, so I spent a lot of time there. She discovered I was there. Got my mother's number. I started ringing my mother, turned up at her door and confronted her. My mother was afraid to go out in our garden. She would drive up and down in a taxi in front of my mother's house. And I'd call the police and let them know, but there was, in their eyes, nothing they could do. They would just say to me to change my number, maybe change my email address, change my address. But it just became something that really was beginning to really scare me and have an impact on my mental and emotional health. I was trying to complete an MA in Dunleary at the time and, you know, completely sort of destabilized that situation, my ability to sort of study and function and work. So I moved to Dundalk, I think after about a year and a half or so of all that. And she didn't seem to know where I was. So for a while I was felt, okay, maybe this has moved on. But then one night I was sitting in the studio in the front of my house and I got this tap on the window and I opened the blinds and she was standing outside waving at me. So it was like a horror film. So then she began to really target my house in Dundalk. She would arrive at all hours of the night, bang on the door, 1:30 in the morning, disappear in her car. I'd call the guards. They would come down, possibly tell me they'd have a look. But they got very tired of that very quickly. And one night she called so many times in the day and the night, they told me that they would, well, the desk sergeant said to me, if I called him again, he'd bring me up to the station and lock me up and I could get on with my night and he could get on with his. There was one instance in Dundalk where she had called to my house in the daytime and was screaming hysterically up and down the street. A couple of guards came down with a Vanguarda and later on that afternoon when I was cycling up the town, they pulled up beside me in a car and the band guarder screamed out of the car, "Will you ever sort out your relationships and stop making it our problem?"
And she was contacting other people in your life as well. I believe at one stage she contacted your best friend and announced your engagement to her.
Yeah, I got a call from best mate of mine early one morning. He was living abroad at the time. He said to me, "Am I going to be best man? I believe you're getting married. Why didn't you tell me?" And I thought it was a prank. I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "It's all over Facebook." So I went on Facebook and she had set up a event on Facebook for our engagement and invited all these people on Facebook. So she had got all my contacts and then she started stalking this producer as well. She thought I was in a relationship with this woman, harassing her, threatening her. She was a single mother and she kind of made threats against her child and stuff like that. So yeah, there was a lot of incidents of that type. Anybody that I tried to work with or set up projects with would get targeted invariably, and that would unravel my ability to work, which I think was part of the modus operandi, was to isolate me and stop me being able to function really.
You moved to Brighton in 2015, and I'm just wondering, when you moved from Dublin, was your stalker a big motive in trying to move country? Like, did you think that maybe in changing where you lived, you might have a hope of leaving her behind?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd gotten into a relationship with someone that I'd known for a long time. My stalker realised this, went in, confronted my partner, challenged her, started to stalk her, attacked us violently outside of her apartment. One morning, she'd got into the apartment the night before, tried to kick the door in. We got the guards down. Guards removed her but didn't arrest her. And she waited outside in her car until we left the next morning. And I know I always had my phone on 999 speed dial. And she attacked both of us and she was dragging me around the place, tore my rotator cuff, which I still have a shoulder injury from, tried to put me through a plate glass window. So that went to court. She was fined. She was let off. Again, she kind of spilled some big story to the judge and it all seemed to come back in my face. So it was really, really scary. Found an opportunity in Brighton and moved, yeah, to kind of start a new life. I thought at the time, it's not possible that someone could follow you. I mean, even though she was harassing me while I was in the States as well. So for about the first year or so, I seemed to be able to establish some sort of normal life. Got a great job working with a great bunch of people and things, you know, began to feel a little bit normal. I was hypervigilant all the time. When I was in Ireland, I was scared all the time. You get these sort of paranoia You don't trust people. You don't trust yourself. You blame yourself. I mean, that was the thing in Baby Reindeer as well. A lot of the shame and the self-questioning and the sort of self-loathing I really related to, which was quite difficult to watch. That sort of more inner psychological damage, you know. So eventually she found out where I was and she started coming to Brighton and demanded to see me. She started to ring the college I was working at. So at times they couldn't function, the office couldn't function. She was ringing their phone so much. We had an open event in one of our campuses. She set up an account in the college's name, ordered over £200 worth of pizzas, sent them to this event. And these things are just really humiliating. She started to target my sister and her husband, and she had a couple of small kids at the time. They lived in Eastbourne. She would again send pizzas to their house, send taxis. When you say that kind of thing to people, it sounds like, right, sending the taxis and pizzas. But it disempowers your ability to have normal relationships. So, you know, at times it got really dark and it was causing so much pain to the people around me that, you know, I did get to the edge of sort of thinking if I wasn't here, then maybe it would all go away and everybody else could get on with their life.
I actually can't imagine what that's like to deal with in one case, never mind for 10 years.
Yeah, it was really destructive. And so when I got to the UK, I had let the police know that this situation had been ongoing. When she started to come at me in Brighton, then I started to report the incidences. She confronted me one day where I thought she was going to attack me. So I called the police. They immediately came to my house, interviewed me, put a community liaison onto me. They took all my emails. They took phone records, phone calls and texts. And they got a PC onto the case who was an extraordinary woman and, you know, basically saved my life. She took it really seriously, recognized that this was a violent stalker, that I was in danger and people around me were in danger. She had started then to stalk a colleague of mine and make some serious threats that she was going to kill her. And again, you know, it's just chilling. You get these calls from people and saying, you know, I've got these phone messages where this person is saying they're going to do these terrible things. And yeah, you just can't comprehend what is really going on, what you can do to stop this or to help this.
Dr. Staunton, I might try and bring you in here. The story that Jarlath has taken us through and has very generously shared with us, a lot of us would like to believe that people like his stalker are rare. This is like an extraordinary kind of once in a lifetime story. But how common is the experience that Jarlath had to endure for 10 years? Is this a common problem in Ireland?
Well, first of all, I have to say how distressing it is to hear Jarlath's story, and he is so generous in sharing it, because I do believe that is so empowering maybe to other people, and hopefully that will also bring him over time a sense of closure and healing that he so clearly deserves. Sadly, Ellen, this is not an uncommon story. First of all, to answer your first question, the prevalence, we don't know what the actual prevalence rate is because we haven't got a data set to confirm it. Now that we have legislation with the Garda Síochána, that will help to generate a better picture of the reality of the situation. What I can tell you is from our survey, which was the only survey conducted in this country, that we had over 1,000 people participate in that survey. Now that tells me that the prevalence is far greater than what we might have ever suspected. We had almost 900 people included in our final analysis, and nearly one in every 10 of those were male victims. So again, we really need to have really open and honest conversations and really raise awareness as to the reality of stalking, which has been highlighted by Jarlath's story. It is a process. It is not one thing. It is a relentless process. Jarlath has used all the words designed to manipulate, undermine, unravel, invade, inveigle, control somebody else's life. It is not innocent. It cannot be brushed under the carpet. It cannot be put down to mental ill health. There are very serious risk factors involved. among the people who perpetrate those kinds of behaviours against another human being.
I was really struck listening to Jarlath's story by, unfortunately, the difference in response when he went to the authorities in Ireland and when he went to the authorities in the UK. What is the legal situation at the moment in Ireland for someone who is a victim of stalking, and what kind of protection can the guards offer them?
So it's only since last year that we now have legislation which, first of all, identifies and calls out stalking for what it is. So we now have a legal definition around stalking. Now, that's very, very important, because Jarlath's experience, unfortunately, is actually very similar to what our respondents told us in our survey. There were very mixed reports around the reception they would get from An Garda Síochána, because as Jarlath highlights, any one of those little, you know, behaviours in and of itself doesn't seem very problematic, and it certainly will not be illegal. But the real issue is that kind of persistent, obsessive, intrusive behaviours which are unwanted, which are designed to cause damage, either reputational or physical. Each one of those in and of itself may not be sufficient for the Gardaí to do anything. And hence, individuals who report to the Garda station are met with that kind of, well, there's nothing really we can do. Go away and sort it out yourself. That situation should now change. The legislation is there. It's called out. There is a piece of legislation around stalking. And what will need to happen is the Gardaí will need to be trained. But we have coercive control legislation. Now we have the stalking legislation. What that'll do, well, at least it will allow the guards to pursue a charge faster than what they might otherwise have been able to do. The lesson and the learning for people who might be listening is, just as Jarlath says, if there is anything about somebody's behaviour that makes you feel uncomfortable in any way, you start to document it. Do talk about it. Sometimes it takes a third person to highlight how bizarre it is and how not right it is. Because when you are in a relationship, and again, we're kind human beings. Again, Jarlath tells it very eloquently. There might have been a sense of kindness. You don't want to upset somebody. You might sense that that person is vulnerable. And for most cases, that may be the case. But in this particular instance, you see how that very quickly becomes risky behavior. And that very quickly turns the other way, where that person now is using Jarlath's kindness in this instance against him and has now just tapped into something. And it is serving a deep psychological need of the perpetrator.
And Jarlath, all of this started off with a very innocuous everyday interaction, and as Dr. Staunton said, where nearly your kindness was exploited. How did you get out of this? How did you manage to get your stalker to stop?
She turned up one night in Brighton. We had a small staff gathering organised. We were going to be downstairs in a restaurant. The same night, my best mate's daughter was in a musical. So I didn't go for the first half of the evening. I went to see the musical, and when I came back into town and got off the bus, my stalker was standing there. So I had a small compact camera that I always carried with me. My phone had died, or I'd switched it off. So she started screaming at me to talk to her. She needed to talk to me. What was I doing? Why was I doing this? So I just began to record her and say that I didn't want to speak to her, to get away from me. I ran into Sainsbury's, into the shop, said to the security guy, you need to call the police. You know, there's a reference number. This woman is stalking me. She's dangerous and violent. So he immediately got on the phone. The two of us stood inside the shop. She was outside screaming. Then she disappeared. So police came and I reported this. I went around back to the staff and realized that she had come into the restaurant. So she had come into the bar downstairs. And if I had been there, I mean, I don't know what she was planning, but she was out to confront me. Anyway, I got onto the police officer that was dealing with the case. She took that very seriously. So they brought forward the case. They got approval to raid her apartment, took all her devices, arrested her, charged her, brought her to court in Brighton Magistrates Court. The judge in the Magistrates Court told this woman that the case was so serious that she would have to send it to Crown Court because she couldn't give her a strong enough sentence, and that she should prepare herself for a serious prison sentence. So she was referred to Lewis Crown Court for sentencing. And even before, I think maybe even that day or the day before, I was getting messages from this woman saying that we should be together. Why was I doing all this? It was all completely wrong. I got it completely wrong, that she was in love with me and, you know, we could fix this. So she walked into Lewis Crown Court and was sentenced for 2 4-year sentences, one for stalking against myself, one for stalking against my colleague. And she served 2 years, was on parole for 2 years, and that was 2 years ago. So, yeah.
And what has life been like since?
Well, it's been good. You know, it's really tricky to get over it. You know, when I got the call that she'd been sentenced, I didn't feel any sense of particular relief. I really thought about everything that I'd lost. There's a kind of sadness to the whole thing. You know, like you say, this person had also destroyed their life in some ways. I got talk therapy. I did a lot of kind of holistic therapy. I've done a lot of meditation, talked to people, focused on it not defining my character. So rebuilding relationships, letting some go that had been damaged, and just processing, moving forward, being positive. I've got a good job, of good place to live, good friends, family, people I love. So, yeah, I mean, things are in a good place.
You've done so well to make sure that this period of time doesn't define your life. But I'm just so conscious, you know, this did dominate your life for 10 years and you were forced to live in this kind of state of fear. Do you ever get to a point where you feel fully safe and secure and fully sure that this person won't come back into your life again?
I don't know. I don't really think about it too much. I don't dwell on it. It could happen today, tomorrow, you know, I don't know. Can't live looking over my shoulder through this process. Say maybe watching something like Baby Reindeer brought a lot of it back, brought back the anxiety, brought it back a lot of the sort of paranoias, you know, a lot of the behaviors that I had to work on to let go of, because I'd adapted my life so much and adapted my behavior so much that, you know, I felt a bit nuts a lot of the time. So it brought back a lot of those memories, but it also highlighted that I've moved on hugely and my life is not about that now. It might sound like a cliche, but I'm proactive, I'm positive, I'm focused on the things that I'm about and make me feel good. And I'm here, I'm alive, I'm kicking, and that's it, you know.
And my thanks to Jarlis Rice and to Dr. Kira Staunton. I'm Ellen Coyne, and today's episode of The Indo Daily was produced by Garrett Mulhall, researched by Dave Hanratty, with sound by Rory Bones. Archive clips from the Netflix series Baby Reindeer and The Irish Independent. If you enjoy The Indo Daily, don't forget to follow and leave us a review. If you've been affected by anything in this podcast, there is a list of helplines on The Irish Independent. Just search for someone to talk to.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.